Hi, Gutzvach. This is Yisachar Wartel, and this is Parshat Shlach. Working our way towards, unfortunately, more and more complaints. This time it's from the 10 spies who are touring the land, and that is what I will be talking about. So before I begin, I want to remind you, Shir is sponsored in loving memory of Sarah Bala, but Menachem Mendel, may her neshama have an aliyah. I also want to apologize in case I did speak this one out last year. That is possible. It will also be in my upcoming Sefer, but it is a very good one, but there's a lot in it, so please do your best to pay attention, and I will try and speak a little more slowly. Sometimes when it's a longer word, I'm in more of a rush to, like, get it out quickly, but I'll try. In this week's Parsha, the spies are sent out to survey Eretz Yisrael, and 10 of them come back with what's called Dibat Haaretz, slander of the land. Now, this interesting expression is numerically equal to that of Shabbat, something which numerous commentaries point out. Shin Bet Tov, 702. At first, there seems to be no connection, but upon closer inspection, it is in fact shown to be inherently related. Shabbat, or Shabbos, is a time to reflect upon one's relationship with Hashem and his relationship with the world. It's a time for families to come together. In short, it's a time for oneness. And that's not only true for the Sabbath day, but also the Sabbath year, which is known as Shemitah, which of course we're also in this year. Now, the Shemitah, or sabbatical year, is a time to let the land rest, giving it somewhat of a personification, which we also see by Dibat Haaretz, slander of the land. The land, of course, doesn't have feelings, right? It's obvious land doesn't have feelings. And although it's beneficial from an agricultural standpoint to let it regain nutrients and whatever, Hashem did not have to create nature that way. So rather, the Shabbos, or the Shemitah year, was rather given to us so that we could refrain from work, we could refrain from farming, and spend more time to reflect. Without having to expend effort each day to toil and make a living, the Jewish people would now be free to spend more time with their families, more time learning Torah, and have more time for personal growth. It would also require faith and trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which would thereby strengthen the bond between them and their sense of awareness in general between man and Hashem. However, the Meraglim, the spies, have become comfortable with their life in the Midbar, that Hashem would provide them with food, provide them with shelter, and provide them with clothing. They were once hard laborers in Mitzrayim and never wanted to go back to that again. They knew that if they went back to Eretz Yisrael, they would have to once again work the land, and they might not be slaves, and they may not be beaten, but they didn't want to have to do hard work again. Life was easy. Life was good for the most part, right? It was just, in comparison, they just really got everything from Hashem, right? So they looked at it from the perspective of the labor that they would do, which is the 6 years that they would work, or correspondingly the 6 days of the week in which they would work, but did not comprehend the beauty of Shabbos or the sabbatical year that was built in. They missed part of the picture. Now, this is also symbolized by the Eshkol, the cluster of grapes that they brought back from the land. Perek Gimel Pasuk Chaf Gimel states, Vayavo'u ad Nachal Eshkol, and they came unto the valley of Eshkol. And it was so called because the giant clusters of grapes that grew there. Now the pasuk continues, "V'chartu misham zmora ve'eshkol anavim echad," and they cut from there a branch and one cluster of grapes. Now here, interestingly, the word eshkol is spelled with a vav, whereas before it was not. Before it was spelled aleph shin chaf lamed, and now it's spelled aleph shin chaf vav lamed. Now eshkol without a vav is numerically equal to the word artzachem, your land. This enormous cluster could have been seen as an amazing blessing. The abundance of fruit was seemingly endless. If the produce of his land was this bountiful, then surely there wouldn't be a need to worry about Shemitah year. This is your land. This is going to be one of the most amazing brachas that Hashem will give you, this amazing fruitfulness of this land. But alas, it wasn't the Shemitah year that the Meraglim were concerned with, but rather they were concerned with the other 6 years, or the other 6 days of the week. Aside from having to work and toil for one's need, they also knew that living in the land would require abundantly more commandments to take effect, as we know there are a lot of mitzvot that are only relevant when people are in the land of Israel, many of which are still relevant today. But that's what they're focusing on, right? They're focusing on all the other mitzvot they would have to do. They already were learning so many mitzvot, and they didn't want to take it anymore. And they would have a whole new set of mitzvot revolving around crops that they didn't have to work with. They had to work for the crops, they had to tithe the crops, they had to leave some for the poor, and they had to worry about kilayim, and then they had Shemitah restrictions, and this was just too much. They just didn't want to have to deal with it. Like, you know what, like, they could take on the mitzvot in the Midbar, fine, but they just didn't want to keep taking on more and more and more, and they missed part of the beauty of the mitzvot. It was just like mitzvah, 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 burden, 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 burden. That's how they saw it. They didn't want to be forced into this, and they assumed, incorrectly perhaps, that the rest of the nation did not either. Of course, they didn't really consult them. They just said, oh, the land is bad and, you know, whatever. So therefore, they saw this Eshkol as an opportunity to wriggle free from the circumstances. They saw the Vav, which represents a connection. In this case, not a connection to Hashem, but a connection, a way to connect what they were instructed to do, which was to bring back produce, to that which they wished to do, which was to not go into Eretz Yisrael, not go into the land. Yet nevertheless, when cutting the cluster, there was still a chance to be awe-inspired. They took the cluster as one, but then the pasuk continues, Vayaseehu bimot bishnaim, and they carried it with poles as two. Now, it's often translated as on a double pole, or in two sets of poles. But the pasuk doesn't actually say bimot shnaim, which means two poles, but rather bishnaim, with poles, with two. What does that mean? The Meraglim had made up their mind to have the cluster serve as two functions, actually. So that was the two. To be a source of division, which is also symbolized by the number two, between Moshe and the Jewish people. And, you know, of course, to just fulfill their, you know, obligation to bring back fruit. So Rashi points out that Caleb and Yeshua were aware of the other's agenda, and therefore they specifically refrained from carrying this fruit because they knew that part of their purpose in bringing it back was to sow division amongst the nation, and specifically between Moshe and the Jewish people. Now the pasuk states, "L'makom ha'hu kara nachal eshkol ad al edot ha'eshkol asher kartu misham v'nei Yisrael." For this place was called the Valley of Eshkol on account of the occurrence of the Eshkol that B'nai Yisrael cut from there. Now, once again, Eshkol is written with a vav, both times in the pasuk, and it's shown to have crucial importance. Furthermore, the pasuk states that B'nai Yisrael cut from there. What's there? At this point, it was only the 10 spies that had cut the fruit. What does it mean that B'nai Yisrael cut them? Like, it was only 10 spies that cut. Rather, the pasuk can be reinterpreted as follows. Asher kartu misham B'nai Yisrael, that which they cut from there, B'nai Yisrael, right? That which they cut, in other words, let's say, that which they cut B'nai Yisrael from there, what they were doing with the grapes and cutting this cluster and the plans that they had within was also, in a sense, cutting off B'nai Yisrael in the process. The root kare in simple meaning is defined as cut, but can also refer to excursion. By the acts of these 10 spies bid, they cut off B'nai Yisrael from ever reaching the land which they had just spoken badly about, and only the next generation would be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Torah explains that this avera was symbolized by ha-eshkol, the eshkol, which is numerically equivalent to the word snu'ah, which means hated. The Meraglim acted as though they hated the land. They may not have really, but they did not treat it like the land of blessing that it surely was and is, and the entire generation was forced to pay the price. Now, that is, of course, except for Caleb and Yeshua. Yeshua was expected to side with Moshe, but Caleb was the big surprise based on the spies' agenda. So what's the significance of 10 being apart from 12? There's actually a lot written on this, and just going to tap into a little bit. This is also seen hundreds of years later when the 10 tribes were exiled from the land and only two remained. That's right, you have 12 tribes, effectively 10, 9 to 10, whatever, were exiled. Most are pretty much gone to this day, and effectively two survived, excluding, you know, whatever Levi and Kohanim we have. But of the 12, only two roughly remained, Yehuda and Binyamin. Now, 12 was written via the letters Bet Yud, which can either be defined as the house of or within me, right? So it'd be Bay or B, both connoting a sense of inclusion or togetherness. Now, these 10 spies, which is symbolized by the letter Yud, did not connect to their spiritual selves, which is also symbolized by the letter Yud and the number 10, but rather they left the collective. Now, when 10 separates from 12, you have two left over. Two is often a symbol of division and disunity. In both cases, these remaining two, so whether it be Caleb and Yeshua or Yehuda and Binyamin, demonstrated strength and a bond to Hashem that patched the division, whereby the 10 was exposed and broken without a source to hold them together. In the case of the spies, the two positive ones were Caleb and Yeshua, who merited to enter the land, whereas the 10 spies were consumed in a plague, along with all of their followers, at least the male followers. They all died in the Midbar. By the Assyrian exile, when the 10 tribes were exiled, the Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that Chizkiah, king of Yehuda and Binyamin, was devoutly righteous and influenced the members of the two remaining tribes, right, Yehuda and Binyamin, to devote themselves to Torah and moral purity. They were therefore spared from destruction and exile, unlike the other 10 tribes who were exiled and essentially are lost until this day. So there are countless lessons that could be learned from the story, but perhaps the most intriguing is the power of Shabbat. The report that the spies brought back contained numerous parts, and the fact that there were giants, the city was fortified, technically was truthful. But it was indicative of lacking faith. But technically it was true. So, you know, you could understand them being scared of giants. You could understand them being scared that the cities are fortified. You know, they know Hashem was on their side, but you still think in natural terms. But what was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak? What was the worst thing they did? They made the fruit of the land part of the reason not to enter it. They turned the blessing into an obstacle and a negative thing. The fruit was by no means an obstacle. It was a blessing. The fact that the Meragim manipulated it and used it as a tool for their evil plan was why it was considered a focal point of our story. And much of this revolves around the fact that they focused on what was wrong rather than what was right. They focused on the 6 days of the week or the 6 years of a Shemitah cycle rather than the Shabbos or the Shabbos year. Shabbos is what enables us to endure the rest of the week, and all 7 days are integral towards a meaningful and productive life. And Baruch Hashem, that now we once again have the land of Israel, are once again dependent upon Hashem for rain, and we're able to double the Shabbos blessing by able to also observe the Shemitah year, which we have this year, it gives us an extra chizik and a chance to appreciate it. Now, may it be Hashem's will and our effort towards unity and devotion, including observing the Shemitah year and working together to complete the Shemitah year, that we will merit a time when we shall all be together in the Promised Land and be able to observe all of the 613 Taryag Mitzvot. Shabbat Shalom.